Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, November 19th, 2024. As always, we begin with today's top stories. The first headline reads, Keeping Watch, Danville Schools Superintendent's Work Status Questioned. This article is written by Jennifer Bailey and is based out of Danville. An item on Wednesday's Danville School Board meeting agenda asks for, quote unquote, a public discussion of the superintendent's status. As in, why has Alicia Geddes, G-E-D-D-I-S, spent going on 2 months working from somewhere other than her office at the David L. Fields Administrative Service Center, as board members have heard? I, along with other board members, are getting many, many questions from the public, and we don't have answers, said Darlene Halloran, who joined Kim Corley in requesting the agenda item. Reached Monday by the News Gazette, Danville's 10th year superintendent said she has been the subject of multiple threats, which she said other administrators have witnessed. There have also been recent threats against the school district she mentioned during a board meeting last month. The FBI is investigating the threats toward her, Geddes said. Geddes on Monday would not confirm if she's been out of the office when she last worked from the administrative building or where she's been. At Danville's October 23rd school board meeting, Geddes said she hasn't been absent from her job and still answers all phone calls and emails. And let me pick this up on the last page. One moment. Danville Police Chief Chris Yates told the News Gazette that his department's investigation into threats Geddes believes were made to her safety was, quote unquote, very thorough. Yates said he also asked the FBI's Champaign office to review DPD's work. According to an October 7th memo from Yates to Police Command, obtained by the News Gazette via open records request, Geddes told the police chief that she was leaving her Danville residence until the matter was resolved and the FBI had concluded its investigation. The FBI expressed to Yates that it didn't advise Geddes to leave her residence. It was her own choice, according to the police chief. Then, in an October 22nd memo to police command, Yates expressed Geddes' request that the police officer assigned to the school board meeting follow her home afterward. Yates said the FBI advised him that it didn't receive any information that would indicate Geddes is in danger, but the agency was continuing to look into her complaint. The FBI was to let Danville police know if there were any changes. The Bureau could not be reached for comment on Monday. A police memo dated October 23rd stated that Danville police had completed their investigation of a disorderly conduct complaint Geddes filed regarding a former student. In the memo, Danville Deputy Chief Terry McCord wrote that there was no reasonable suspicion to believe that the former student had been following, stalking, harassing, or in the same area as Dr. Geddes. School board members just want some answers, Halloran said. Board members had asked Geddes not to attend a special meeting on November 6th to discuss the police report and her extended absence from her office in the administration building. Geddes has been Danville superintendent since 2015. Her current contract runs through the 2025-26 school year. And there's no photographs that accompany that article. Next up, Ty John Williams murder trial. Champaign men testify watching friend kill Lyft driver. Excuse me, this article is written by Luke Taylor and is based out of Urbana. After the rideshare car they were in rolled to a stop, two Champaign men say they took their friend's gun and ran, leaving the driver bleeding in the road. They didn't see their friend, who they now say shot the Lyft driver again. All three, all 17 years old at the time, were arrested and charged with murder later that night, January 12th, 2022. Two, TWO, Nashawn Fenderson and Jaheim Dyer, took plea deals later that year. Each pleaded guilty of obstruction of justice in relation to the shooting of Lyft driver Christian Philpotts and agreed to testify against the third man, Tyjon Williams, in exchange for seeing their murder charges dropped. Let's continue on with this in just a moment. Here we go. Those testimonies occurred Monday, the first day of Williams's bench trial. He still faces four charges of first-degree murder. Fenderson's demeanor was remarked upon multiple times by both the defense and prosecution throughout his testimony, which took over 2 hours. He was apparently highly agitated in the courtroom, moving around in the witness stand, and frequently either hesitating for long periods before answering questions or not answering them at all. When asked about his behavior, Fenderson said he was, quote-unquote, under a lot of pressure. "I don't like thinking about this stuff," he told Assistant State's Attorney Scott Larson. "This stuff is messing me up." In contrast, Dyer, who was Williams's cousin, spoke clearly to the court even as he outlined multiple lies he told in his initial interview with police on the night of the shooting. According to his testimony, the three teens were just chilling after school when Williams's mother ordered a Lyft ride to take Williams to a hair appointment, and the other two decided to come along. None of them had ever been to the location where Williams was to get his hair done, and on the way, he seemed to change his mind. Tyjon was feeling paranoid. He wasn't feeling safe, Dyer said. Williams apparently asked Philpotts to turn around and take them home, offering money or marijuana in exchange. Philpotts declined the additional payment but agreed to take them back. Dyer said he saw the gun in Williams' hand as he fired it forward and down into the driver's seat from where he was sitting behind the passenger seat. Then he said Philpotts fell out of the vehicle and Williams climbed forward into the driver's seat, throwing his gun into the back. The two other men began yelling, asking what he was doing and what was happening as Williams drove over two blocks from where the shooting occurred near Urbana's Vine Street and Birkwood Court, up closer to Vine in Pennsylvania before colliding with a truck. Dyer said Williams ran away, leaving behind his gun, shoes, and phone, and the other two never saw him again. Possibly unaware of the phone, Fenderson grabbed the shoes and gun. He and Dyer ran into a nearby backyard and climbed up a fence to hide the gun in a rooftop gutter. Later, both were driven through the area by police and said they were unable to remember where the firearm was. Neither Dyer nor Fenderson had a working phone, so they began knocking on doors to ask to use a phone or Wi-Fi. An elderly man in the 1500 block of Vine let them inside due to the cold and allowed them to make calls. Neither called 911 to report the shooting. "Did you leave him, Philpotts, in the street to die?" asked Stephanie Comey, the Chicago lawyer representing Williams. "Yes," Dyer responded Monday. Security camera footage exhibited in court showed Philpotts as he was when police arrived on the scene, bleeding from the mouth, as a passerby who happened to be an EMT began attempting life-saving measures. Dyer and Fenderson first called Williams' mother, who did not show up as they waited for over an hour at the house. Next, they tried Dyer's mother, who did show up. Urbana Police Officer Cortez Gardner saw them waiting on the porch around 2 hours after the shooting while he was canvassing the area. Gardner testified Monday that he approached, initially believing them to be potential witnesses, but not suspects, as he had no significant suspect description to go by. Fenderson introduced himself as Sean Fender and answered a couple questions, but Dyer avoided responding and began walking toward the corner as his mother had just arrived to pick them up. Gardner said he did not observe any of the nervous behavior Fenderson exhibited in court and that both men were acting normal, quote-unquote, at the time. Still, something about the way they walked away from him made Gardner decide to follow and obtain Dyer's mother's license plate number, which would be used to find the pair later that night. He also knocked on the door to ask the resident if the pair on the porch lived there and learned they did not. Dyer and Fenderson spent some time at Dyer's home alongside several of his family members, including Williams' mother, during which time both changed clothes. Police found the address via the license plate number obtained by Gardner and arrested both while they were leaving later. Despite Fenderson's hesitation, by the end of Monday morning, he testified that he had taken Williams' gun and shoes from the Lyft vehicle and ran. He also admitted to making up a false name for himself when originally speaking to a police officer and changing clothes not long after the shooting. Larson asked him directly, "Do you see the person in the courtroom today who shot Christian Philpotts?" Even though he said that Williams had not threatened or made other contact with him, Fenderson said, "I'm scared to answer that question." He did say that he stood by his earlier account to Urbana Police, in which he told them Williams committed the shooting but confirmed few of the details. A police officer and Urbana Fire Department employee, who were some of the first to arrive on scene, also testified Monday, as did an Urbana detective who worked on aspects of the investigation. The trial is scheduled to resume Tuesday morning. Next up, Rural Energy for America program. Rural Energy for America program. Two grants awarded in Piatt County. This article is written by Dave Hinton and is based out of Washington, D.C. More than $97,000 in rural energy funding will be awarded to two Piatt County grants announced by U.S. Representative Nikki Budzinski, a Democrat from Springfield. That's Nikki, N-I-K-K-I, Budzinski, B-U-D-Z-I-N-S-K-I. They are part of more than $952,000 in Rural Energy for America program grant funding from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, awarded in Piatt, Madison, and Macoupin counties. The funds will go directly to energy efficiency upgrades, the build-out of new solar arrays that will lower energy bills for recipients. The Piatt County grants awarded, one, $45,375 to Lipchas LLC, a building lessor in Monticello, and two, $51,870 to Pregame Sports, a fitness and recreation center in Monticello. In total, the energy solar capacity added from this funding will generate $140,000 in energy savings per year for local businesses, and the energy generated from the new installations is enough to power 75 homes. The program offers guaranteed loan financing and grants to agricultural producers and rural small businesses for renewable energy systems or to make energy efficiency improvements. Next up, Champaign County Coroner, Saturday stabbing victim ID'd. This article is written by Jana Wiersema and is based out of Champaign. The coroner's office has released the name of a man who died from a stab wound he received in a domestic altercation that occurred in his home. W.B. Curry, C-U-R-R-Y, 71 of Champaign, was pronounced dead at the scene at 9:50 p.m. Saturday, said Champaign County Coroner Stephen Thuney. Thuney. An autopsy was scheduled for Monday morning, and the coroner's office said an inquest may be held at a later date. Curry's death is still being investigated by the coroner's office and Champaign Police Department. Police previously announced they were investigating a domestic violence incident that occurred in the 2000 block of Cynthia Drive on Saturday night and resulted in a man's death. Police said their initial investigation indicated Curry was involved in an altercation with DeWandi Carter, 67, of Champaign, with Carter stabbing the man in the chest. Carter was arrested pending charges. Further updates may be provided as they become available. Champaign police ask that anyone who has additional information, please call 217-351-4545. Arrangements can be made for information to be shared privately. Again, that phone number is 217-351-4545. The next headline reads, Illinois women's basketball. Field trip day. The crowd goes wild. And it's actually a huge, just big photograph of lots of kids in the stands screaming and yelling and having fun. They're wearing orange. The caption reads, students from Champaign's Boughton Field Elementary joined thousands of other youngsters to cheer on the Illini at Monday's field trip day game at State Farm Center. Neither fans nor players disappointed. The 22nd-ranked Illini rolling past Lemoyne, 94-25. And that photograph is provided by Robin Scholes of the News Gazette. Next up, from Bob Asmussen and his article or column, Family, comma, Tradition. Zelaznik influence easy to spot in football-crazed Leroy. And this article is based out of the town or city of Leroy, L-E, capital R-O-Y, or capital R and then O-Y. There hasn't always been a Zelaznik in charge of Leroy High School football or playing quarterback for the Panthers. It just seems that way. For most of the past five decades, Jim Zelaznik and son BJ have led the pride-producing program in the McLean County community of 3,467. From 1979 to 2000, Jim Zelaznik guided Leroy to 12 state playoff appearances. The Panthers won it all in 1996, going 14-0 and beating Mauiqua Central A&M 16-14 in the Class 2A state championship game. Following Jim Zelaznik's retirement in 2000 and two playoff appearances by his replacement, Gary Tipsword, BJ Zelaznik became the head coach in 2003. And of course, the wins keep coming. 13 more playoff appearances since he took over, including a runner-up finish in Galena in the 2003 Class 1A final. The Panthers dropped a heartbreaker, 21-20, in double overtime. The Panthers are again making a deep run in the 2024 Class 1A playoffs. Led by BJ's son, Bo, as quarterback and linebacker, the Panthers host Lena Winslow in a semifinal game Saturday. The other Panthers are a state power, winning six titles under current coach Rick Arond. And one moment, and I'll find the continuation of this article. Here we go. Having a Zelaznik coach his quarterback son in the playoffs is nothing new for Leroy. BJ helped the Panthers to the quarterfinals in 1992. I loved playing for Leroy, BJ said. I loved my time growing up in the community. But he wasn't sure he would be back. BJ attended Augustana College, where he studied education. One thing I appreciate about my parents, they never pushed me in a direction or discouraged me from anything, BJ said. If there was something I wanted to try or do, they said, go for it. They let me chart my own course, and I'm very thankful for that. Jim and wife Carol showed BJ the work ethic and kindness that has helped lead to his success. Carol was a longtime emergency room nurse. Jim and Carol were high school sweethearts at Joliet East and have been married since 1971. They've been in the same house since 1978. Jim attended Joliet Junior College, where he played football before transferring to Illinois State University. The summer of his senior year in 1971, he got a call for an interview at Leroy on August 10th. He was offered the job on August 12th. He came to Leroy on August 13th to sign the contract and find an apartment with Carol. That night was their wedding rehearsal in Joliet. We got married the next day, Jim said. Jim taught biology, anatomy, and physiology. In the early 1980s, he became athletic director and dean of students while keeping the anatomy and physiology class. Jim originally assisted John Fippinger in football, then became head coach in 1979. Like father, like son. Jim was head coach at Leroy for 22 years. BJ is in year 22 also, and just passed Dad for most wins in program history with number 142, 142 wins. That was a very special moment, Jim said. I patted him on the back and I told him it was about time. Jim is BJ's biggest fan. He's done a great job, Jim said. He's really worked hard to keep going what we have here at Leroy. All the coaches are there for the program. BJ and Jim understand the uniqueness of their situation, the two winningest coaches in Leroy history from the same family. There's this personal pride that you want the community and school to do well, BJ said. It's pretty special. Jim still helps the team, working with the offensive line. One of the Leroy assistants is Greg Kahn, an offensive guard for Jim's state title team. Greg is so good at coaching the offensive line, they don't even need me out there anymore. I come out there just to keep my brain going and bother those guys, Jim said with a chuckle. You might think Leroy plays at Zalesnik Field. Actually, the field is named in honor of Leroy legend L.A. McKean. He was an unbelievable coach, BJ said. This was our 125th year of Leroy football, and we had a rededication of the field in his honor. McKean was a 1978 inductee into the Illinois High School Coaches Association Hall of Fame. Jim went in with a 2003 class, and BJ was honored in 2024. Once he decided to try coaching, BJ wanted to work at the prep level. I felt there was a profession there, a steady job. The teacher retirement system is excellent, BJ said. I always enjoyed working with high school athletes. The journey to become a college coach has to start young nowadays in grad assistant positions and work your way and bounce around. I really have a lot of respect for those guys who can do it and do it well. It takes a toll on you and your family. BJ and wife Amy have three kids, Leroy Sr. Beau, son Abraham 19, and daughter Aurelia 14. BJ, 48, is the Leroy athletic director, and teaches strength and condition and leadership classes. He is enjoying his time and wants to stay in the field for the next term. Amy is a speech language pathologist at Carl. BJ started his coaching career in 1999 as the offensive coordinator at Hayworth. A job opened up right before the next school year at Leroy, and BJ applied. His first year on the Panthers staff was an assistant to Tipsword. The next generation? BJ knows exactly what it's like to be the son of the coach. He was where Beau is today. It's been incredible just to watch his journey, the decisions he's made to maximize his potential, BJ said. He works out all the time. He chose to wrestle because of what that would do in terms of physically and emotionally to help him grow as an athlete. I'm just super proud of the sacrifices he has made to do everything he can to help his team and the school be successful. BJ didn't push Beau into football. The only rule we had in our house was, you have a duty to your community and your school. You're going to do something. BJ said, you're not just going to sit around. Challenge accepted. Besides excelling in the three sports and school, a 4.0 student, Beau is involved in chorus, band, school musicals, National Honor Society, Scholastic Bowl, etc. My parents helped me to understand that in order to be the most well-rounded person you could be, you need to interact with all different types of people and be in all different types of environments and try and throw yourself out there so you can learn to better yourself as a person, Beau said. Beau sounds like a 30-year-old, an extremely bright 30-year-old. Beau wants to study astronomy in college and has applied to multiple programs. This past summer, he worked on a research team at the California Institute of Technology. We did some research on young stellar objects and identifying baby stars, Beau said. In January, his group will go to Washington, D.C. and present their research to an astronomy convention. That will be awesome, Beau said. Continuing in football is an option, but if he goes to a top program to study astronomy, he won't have time for sports. He's also realistic about his football future. I'm 5'9 and 180 pounds, he said. There's nothing about me that's special athletically. Beau is thrilled with the work at Leroy done by his grandpa and dad. With that consistency they've had, they've allowed the program to stay above water and excel, Beau said. Beau said grandpa and dad don't sugarcoat when coaching. They're both here the way it is. Here's the way it is, Beau said. They give it to you straight. They're realists. They also know how to communicate with you and to talk to you and help you understand. Any thoughts from Bo about being the next in a line of coaches? Yes, I could see myself working with kids and coaching, he said. That is an option. Grandpa is all for it. That would be incredible, Jim said. That would be fantastic. As a quarterback, Bo is like having another coach in the field. Bob Asmussen is a columnist for the News Gazette. He can be reached by phone or email. His phone number is 217-393-8248. That's 217-393-8248. And his email address is Asmussen, A-S-M-U-S-S-E-N, at newsgazette.com. And there's several photographs that accompany this article. One primarily is a large family photograph standing out in the evening on the football field. The caption reads, members of the Zelesnik, that's Z-E-L-E-S-N-I-K, or I'm sorry, E-Z, Z-E-L-E-Z-N-I-K. Members of the Zelesnik family pose at a recent Leroy High School football game. Jim and BJ Zelesnik have a combined 45 years as head coach of the Panthers. There are also a couple other photographs all provided by Robin Scholes, or all by Robin Scholes, or provided by the family. One is Small Town Big Pride, Leroy Football. It's a sign from somebody's window. And also there is a photograph of the three generations, three men all together, current Leroy High School quarterback Bo Zelesnik, number 19, poses with dad coach BJ on the left and grandpa Jim. Next up, let's do top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. The kids from Watsika asked for an earlier than usual time slot at Sunday's Faces of Winter for a very good reason, so they could get back in time for the return of the Brave Warriors Foundation's Paint Your Path 5K. Created in honor of beloved high school art teacher and coach Brent McTaggart after his death in a 2013 traffic accident, the event has raised more than $20,000 in scholarships given annually to two seniors. For the class of 2025, which includes his son, Drew McTaggart, the event means the world. The race was then five-year-old Drew's idea. He asked me one night if we could all just come together to remember Dad, said his mom, Cassie. Year one saw more than 450 participate as the streets were filled with families, friends, and people I've never met. Eventually, the race was paused even as scholarship donations continued. When Drew began running, however, Mom decided there'd be one last race, sponsored, like always, by the class of 2025, organized by Drew's sisters, Kennedy and Addison. It included a balloon launch and postcards for each participant to write a memory or give a life update to someone they've lost, Cassie said. What would Dad think? I think Brent would be incredibly proud of all of us, Cassie said. As a community, we continue to come together. Most of all, he would be so proud of his children. I'm thankful for them and know that their dad is so proud. And there's a group photo of kids in Watsika. The caption reads, members of the Watsika High class of 2025 at the last race that was held prior to Sunday. That photo is provided. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been Part 1 of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, November 19th, 2024. I'll be back to read Part 2 of the News Gazette with you shortly, so please stay with me. It's always a pleasure to read with you. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.